He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys.
Good morning, everybody on the radio listening to Car Keys with Robin Leach, Jay DeMarcus. Jay is out of the country, so we'll get some out of the country news. But I'd like to start out with the following commentary about availability of cars that are less expensive than the average price that we have been touting on this show for week after week when we bring this topic up, which it's now up in the mid 40s. As the average price of all the cars sold in the United States, we talked about mid $40,000 cars not being very affordable for lots of people. And I found out that from a source that there are apparently 9 manufacturers that offer vehicles that can be bought, if you can find them, at $30,000 or less. And I thought that would be interesting because we probably have lots of listeners on this show, we hope, of course, that would like to know about cars that are available for $30,000 or less. And the surprising thing is that there's some SUVs in there, but many of the cars, as has been happening at the lower end, have a lot of the features that are available on the more expensive vehicles. So you're not really getting a basic car anymore. In my opinion, in most cases, the manufacturers that I have on the list and that may or may not have everyone that's currently available, Brazil, and maybe more, include Chevrolet, Buick, Toyota, Hyundai, Kia, VW, Mitsubishi, Ford, and Nissan. There may be one or two others I'm missing, but those 9 manufacturers have vehicles, if you can find them on dealers' lots or get them, for prices under $30,000. That's not $29,995 and up. There are some that start as low as with a $25,000 and some change in front of them. And there are some pretty good models in there. And Toyota, I think it's got like 5 different vehicles, including a Camry that apparently does start at right around $29,995. And the Camry has always been a mid-sized sedan level car. I don't know whether anybody could find one available for under $30,000 at a Toyota dealer near us. But that is it for that topic. And Jay, you're on.
Didn't you used to have a Toyota Camry?
I had a Toyota Camry back in 2013. It was a hybrid. And I don't remember what the price was, but it was in the 30s. It was either in the low 30s or whatever. But I loved that car. It was a great sedan. It was a hybrid, and it got 30-plus miles a gallon. And it was, you know, I didn't get the luxury. I didn't have a sunroof, but it had air conditioning and cruise control and all the things you wanted. And so, I believe all the base cars have cruise control. I believe they have air conditioning, and they probably don't have a lot of other things. But that's pretty good for $30,000 or less in today's world. How long this will last, to continue the topic beyond what I said, may depend on what happens in the tariff world. But
hold on for a second. There's always the option of not buying a new car. I mean,
that's not the point of this topic. Okay? And you can comment that, yes, you can find lots of cars, used cars, well below $30,000. Used Priuses, used Toyotas, used all those models that I mentioned and more. So that's true. The older the used car, the cheaper it will be.
Not necessarily. It can become very expensive.
Well, that's if you're talking about Porsches, which you like to talk about, and they go up.
There are others.
I know. Anyways, Jay, you're on.
Well, I was going to talk about affordable cars as well.
Okay,
I was just saying I just started the subject saying that for $30,000, you can buy a heck of a lot of used car, and if you take your time and you know what you're looking for, there are plenty out there. Also, the idea that high mileage cars are to be avoided like the plague is no longer quite true, because You know, cars will go 100, 150, 200,000 miles. And so this thing about changing cars at 100,000 miles is just, you know, a
Not
notion
applicable.
that's a little, you know, out of date. So
Okay, well,
as long as
I'm glad we're continuing this discussion. That brings me into what you do when you do find a used car under $30,000. Depending on where you buy it, it could be as lucky as a pre-owned with maybe a certified warranty on it, but highly unlikely. And if you buy a used car from a major manufacturer's dealership, you may get a better warranty situation than you do if you buy a used car from Joe's used car lot, of which there are hundreds or thousands around the country, in which I think they are required by different state laws to give you a minimum of either 3 months and 3,000 miles or something in that neighborhood, after which you are on your own once something goes wrong with those cars that needs repair, even if they will go 100 or 200,000 miles.
Let's remember too on used cars also, if you're financing, it'll be a higher interest rate.
That is very true, Mike, and thank you for that point. Plus, you don't know in the used car world whether the brakes are about finished or whether you have to check tires out and if the tire treads are worn or whatever. And because there are all kinds of used car places around the country and they all offer different levels of what they're trying to sell you.
Well, this is true, and this is why. And you mentioned the certified pre-owned, which is probably one of the best ways to go around about things. You know,
Well,
when you can buy heavily discounted, and CPO certified pre-owns are specifically good deals when purchasing a higher end car. So, you know, whatever
that
the
is
brand.
very true, and we may be out of our $30,000 range, but the point being with the certified pre-owned is that most manufacturers require those cars that will be achieving a CPO status for the dealer to advertise it so require minimum standards of remaining brake wear capability on the brakes, the drums, the discs, and whatever. And they do require tires to have a minimum tread wear level, or else they have to replace both those components, the tires and the brakes, with new components if the cars they are trying to give a CPO status to are going to be certifiable at that level. And that may even include wiper blades, used cars that sit on lots in the blazing sun. The wiper blades dry out in the sun. They may have 70,000 miles on them, and whether or not they had new brakes put in during that time, that's a lot of stuff that listeners who want to shop those used car levels need to be aware of. Besides just taking out for a drive and seeing how nice it is to drive, which they all probably do.
Well, and if you're looking used too, you can go to Carfax, but I would also say to people, if you're looking at buying a used car in a dealership or whatnot, make them pay for the Carfax and show you what the maintenance and accidents and all are.
Good point, Mike. Thank you very much. Jay?
Yeah, no, I fully agree. And you should not have to pay for a Carfax if you're buying a particular vehicle and if you're serious about it. Oftentimes, if you're looking at the major used car and new car web platforms, oftentimes the Carfax will be available right there online.
That's
And
true.
the serious sellers will provide them without you even having to ask for them. And obviously, it's a good way to see where the car's been, that it hasn't come from spending, you know, 5 or 10 years in upstate Vermont, by which time you can see right through the car, through the rust holes.
Yes.
And yes, you can see the maintenance that's been done on the car.
Well, yes, I interrupt you a little bit just because I happened to review the Carfax that my wife got with a recently purchased, which she purchased and bought, Q5 plug-in hybrid. And one of the things that showed up on the Carfax was that at some point, tinted window treatments had been supposedly installed on this vehicle. That they are not currently present on what we purchased. So I don't. So to go to the accuracy of Carfaxes, I guess they. I don't say that they're all probably 100% truthfully accurate, because if a service center does not supply the service records on a car, and I don't know whether Joe's service center does it as accurately as Ford, Chevy, Audi, whatever does, they are very valuable assets, as Jay has mentioned, but they could be wrong somewhere along the way. So it really takes, you know, you really do have to look at it, and you have to know something about what you're looking at when you're looking at used cars at any price.
Or anything, for that matter.
Right, okay.
Yeah, there can be errors on any service.
So guys, without wanting to be doom and gloom, I do want to bring up something that has been bothering me in the last few days. A few days ago, there was a tractor-trailer crash in Florida involving a tractor-trailer and a minivan, in which all three driver and two passengers, all three occupants in the minivan, were killed instantly. And the truck driver made a bonehead move in doing a U-turn on the Florida Turnpike, and was, you know, at some point sitting across the three lanes of the highway, or four lanes, it may even be there. And the minivan came in at full speed and just, you know, ran under the trailer. It brings me to the point that it is one of the most dangerous things out there. Cars have become structurally a lot stronger than they ever were. You see crashes happen where cars tumble and roll and hit things, and the passenger, the cell, remains pretty much intact, and people oftentimes can walk out unharmed. But if you're going to hit the back or the side of a tractor trailer, most likely, and even if you have an SUV which has a higher hood, most likely that engine compartment is going to go wedge itself under the trailer, and you're going to hit the trailer with the base of the windshield, and basically the occupants get crushed and decapitated, and it's you know, really ugly. And so I've been thinking about that, and how can that be avoided? Well, the first thing obviously is to be paranoid on the roads and not really trust any of the tractor trailers, as, you know, they are just a sample of the population. Even though they are supposed to be professionals, there are probably a bunch of them that are just, you know, not safer drivers than anybody else. And you know, what can you do? Well, there really isn't much. And you, keeping your eyes peeled. In the case of this minivan, could that minivan have seen that tractor trailer, you know, across the highway sooner? Maybe, you know, yeah, maybe.
Likely.
But it doesn't change the outcome, right? My only point is, keep your eyes peeled. It is also extremely dangerous. You see cars ramming into tractor trailers from behind. And unfortunately, of course, I saw one or two of those videos, and now my social media feeds are just getting populated with all those crash scenes. And it's ugly. And a lot of the times, it reminds me that, you know, what can we do to avoid that? Is, you know, vehicles have automated braking capabilities now. When a vehicle, quote unquote, sees an obstacle, should hit the brakes and try to, you know, come to a stop. If the obstacle is right in front of you, and if that obstacle is a trailer, you're just going to go right under. And you know, it's sad. You know, I've been thinking about that. You know, what could we do? You could have systems on the back of the trailers that would be a little like what we see in the back of construction vehicles. A lot of the state vehicles or construction vehicles on the road have these big, you know, 10-foot bumpers in back of them, so that if you go slamming into them when they're at a stop, you know, you have a chance of walking away from it. And so it brings me to, you know, school buses and Ramming into school buses is not a good thing either. Not ramming into them and hitting kids is not a good thing either. We're getting into school bus season. Moral of the story, I guess, is just keeping our eyes peeled.
Well, I'd like to chime in.
That was a long rant. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay, Jay. I agree with the keeping your eyes peeled is necessary, not for that particular topic in this subject matter, but for the other thing that I find on our local roads, which are two lanes, you've got delivery trucks that pull into driveways forward, and then you got to back out onto the highway to get back out. Now, I do not know how far a delivery truck's view in the rear is to the driving person who's driving that truck. But when you have a 20-foot delivery truck, a big UPS truck, for example, or a FedEx truck, larger than the smallest vehicles, and they start pushing their rear ends out into the highway, this is when you also need to be having your eyes on the road and not on anything else. And because they may not know something's coming in time to stop backing out. That leaves it up to the driver of the vehicle that's going down the road and hoping to have the right of way, totally alert and totally ready to take protective action, which is braking in time not to hit that truck, or at the worst case, having slowed down enough so you don't get the kind of accident that you just discussed with the tractor trailer that was perpendicular across a multi-lane road. And why that van driver did not see it a half a mile away or whatever is beyond me. But that happens, and you want to stay living, you got to be alert.
Well, you need to make sure, too, people driving tractor trailers are qualified. In this case, that driver shouldn't have been in that truck.
Well, we don't know about it.
Reasons, and we know that for several reasons.
Well, it's important to mention that, though, because we're going after the van driver. The truck driver was not qualified and should not have been in that seat, period.
We're totally in agreement with that. And by no means am I blaming the victim in this case. But all I'm saying is that, it doesn't... The point here is that in a crash, it doesn't really matter who's at fault. Of course it does, but for your sake, it's what can you do to avoid it if the situation is
and survive an impact.
Yeah, and hopefully not get into an impact. But but yet again, cars are a heck of a lot safer than they were 20 or 30 years ago. And I've said this a bunch of times too. The structures are way more solid than they were. We have way more airbags in the cars. But that is not a reason not to be staying alert.
Jay, anything new in the European field of automobile use?
I've been here for a few days. I haven't been on the roads very much, so I don't have much to report. Other than, more safety stuff and discussion, I was talking about somebody here about the fact that in the cities, bicycles are now allowed to ride in the quote-unquote the wrong direction. So they can go in the opposite direction of a one-way street. And I'm not even sure if that's the case in the cities like New York or not. I don't think so, but I honestly don't know. But it's becoming a problem, and I hate to pick on cyclists because I do my darnest to give them respect and space. But respect is a two-way street, and you can't just be. People are getting a little tired of cyclists running the wrong way and having all the rights.
I would like to tell the listeners that there are some cyclists that are riding the electric bikes the wrong way on our streets, too. Where I have been much of the summer on the weekends is a vacation spot, and there are kids out on electric bikes as there are around our listening area. We've talked about kids riding those electric bikes in our area on sidewalks, which should be illegal and shouldn't be done, but still sometimes are done. but the kids riding bicycles going the opposite direction to the oncoming traffic in the same side of the road, I think is a very another area where you, as the driver of the car or truck on that road, need to be alert, because some of these kids ride, I want to tell you, they may, it doesn't matter what direction they're riding, but some of these bicycle riders, especially the ones who think they're hot on the bicycles, ride without any hands on the handlebars. And whether they're electric or whether they're manual, I've seen bicyclists with hands, waving their hands as they're riding down the road on a bicycle, be it manually pedaled or not. They do that.
They're texting on their phones too.
Yeah, they can be texting on their phone. It's just crazy what people think they can do when they're riding a non-car or truck, four-wheel vehicle on our public roads.
Robin, it seems like you don't remember being young, do you?
Oh, I sure do.
And you were a lot smarter?
I wasn't brave enough to take my hands off the handlebars and pretend I could go down the road willy-nilly. At 15 miles an hour or whatever I might have been pedaling. It's like driverless cars, Jay. You know, I'm not big on the driverless car, self-driving cars, so that you can take your hands off the wheel, maybe, and maybe not permanently, but try to read a book or something while you're going along, as some early Tesla, drivers were known to have done. And did not end up surviving.
Yeah, but that's improved quite a bit since then. Let's get up to snuff with how good self-driving is right now. Self-driving is really becoming much more relevant and is going to be on these streets much quicker than you think.
Yes, I agree. And okay. It's fine.
And, it's, you know, totally, if you're going to read a book, don't sit in the driver's seat. Sit in the back of the car. Let the car drive.
Well, I wasn't saying that was the thing they do. They just take their hands off the wheel. You know, I drove a Tesla to Sharon from Hotchkiss School in early days. And basically, I had my hands on the wheel, but were they gripping the wheel? No, they weren't. But they were ready to grip the wheel. And the Tesla steered itself perfectly until we got to a curve where there was a reservoir for the Sharon town on the left. And there's quite a longish right-hand turn, and the steering didn't quite keep the Tesla all the way on its side of the lane at that point.
How many years
ago?
And
I'm sure you were going 50 miles an hour all the way, right?
How many years ago?
Probably I was, because I'd go 45 or 50 around this particular curve all the time, slowing down usually from 60 on the straightaway.
How many years ago was that?
Well, Tesla's been out for how long, Jay? You know.
You're not answering the question.
2015.
So how many years ago you were driving that?
It doesn't matter. I was
It does matter.
It matters
a lot.
You're dissing self-driving when you're talking about when it was in its infancy and it's become miles and miles better. That's very trustworthy. Hell, they've got Teslas that are delivering themselves to the customers now.
That's right. They unpark from the parking place and drive them right up. That's true, Mike. But you know what? Some of those cars might still be on the market.
Those trucks don't make U-turns on the interstate either.
That's true.
Just saying.
But we're not here to rant about that kind of movement and stuff, okay?
So let's talk. I didn't pay much attention. It was Monterey Week. So Monterey Week is just a whole California version and bigger version of our historic festival about to happen in a week or two now, in and around Lime Rock. And it was the opportunity to see, I guess, I didn't see any because I was on the other side of the pond, but some very fancy cars and very nice cars, very expensive cars, Sotheby's, Mecham, Barrett Jackson, all had auctions, and I know a few cars, you know, some cars went for gazillion dollars. And I know Robin doesn't like to hear about nice cars, but it's something to see, and I'm sorry I missed it. So I'm going to try not to miss. I know I won't miss what's happening at Lime Rock in a week or two.
That's August 29th through September 1st. All right, guys. Well, it sounds like it's time to wrap up.
We'll say to our listeners, we hope we'll have more interesting things for you on the next version of Car Keys with Robin Leach, Jay DeMarkin, and...
Car Keys with Robin Leach and Jay DeMarkin is produced at the facilities of WHDD 91.9 FM, RobinHoodRadio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.